morning. Welcome to the House Committee on Higher Education, Innovation, Workforce Development. It's Friday, April 10th. We're set for a productive meeting with a lot of work sessions and a public hearing. Representative Wisnant had a comment before we get started.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, if you haven't had a chance to check the news reports this morning, Oregon Commission votes to fund public universities based upon degrees awarded, not seats filled. The chair, Tim Nesbitt, they announced that they passed a bill that funding will be based upon this. I would hope you would look at that, and I would encourage the chair during our informational meeting period that we have them come in and talk to us about that. I support this fully, but based upon what the newspaper, I don't know what the how it will actually come out, but I think that's another way to bring down cost of education if you can encourage people to graduate in 4 years and not 6 years. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Wisnant. And I do hope we will. It is a worthwhile comment, particularly because we're coming fast towards the deadline for House bills. We have relatively few Senate bills, so hopefully we'll be thinking about informational topics that we should take on when we reach that period. Thanks, Representative Wisnant. Let's start with a work session on House Bill 2747. Victoria.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2747 increases limitation on subtraction for contributions to College Savings Network account to amount per designated beneficiary, prohibits reduction of state share of Oregon Opportunity Grant based on amounts available from College Savings Network, establishes refundable credit against personal income taxes for contributions to College Savings Network account, applies to tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2015, takes effect on the 91st day following adjournment signed in DIE. We have proposed -1 amendments that change the annual contribution cap from $500 to $350. Revenue impact statement has been issued and is available on OLIS. Fiscal impact is minimal. And this measure has a subsequent referral to revenue.
Thank you, Victoria. One slight, I think, correction to what you said. The amendment changes the credit rather than the contribution cap, or maybe that's what you meant, the cap on the credit for the contribution. So you could certainly contribute more to a 529, just you only get credit for that amount. We heard this bill before, as you remember. Michael Parker from the 529 Savings Network is here in case people have questions, but otherwise it's a relatively straightforward bill. Any discussion on the bill before we take a motion? Okay. Representative Gallegos?
Sure. Chair Reed, I move to adopt the -1 amendments dated April 3rd, 2015.
Thank you. Representative Gallegos has moved the -1 amendments dated April 3rd, 2015. Any discussion on the motion? Any objections on the motion? Seeing none, the motion carries. The -1 amendments are adopted. Representative Gallegos.
Chair Reed, I move House Bill 2747 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference.
Thank you. Representative Gallegos has moved House Bill 2747 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, motion carries. House Bill 2747 as amended heads to the Committee on Revenue. Thank you, Committee. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2747. And the preferred order here, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 3308. Victoria.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 3308 directs the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to convene a work group to analyze and make recommendations on how to address disparities in higher education among traditionally marginalized, underserved, and underrepresented communities. Requires work group to submit report detailing analysis and recommendations to Interim Legislative Committee on Higher Education by September 15, 2015. Sunsets the work group on December 31, 2016. Declares emergency is effective on passage. You have proposed -3 amendments that remove the Oregon Health Authority and change the repeal date from 2016 to 2017.
Thank you. Representative Gallegos, it's your bill, your amendments. Would you like to describe them to the committee, please?
Sure. I think the working with a HEC, we recognized that we needed a little more time for the report to be done in, give it a little more juice that way. And I know that people are anxious to see something done with this effort, but I think that getting this underway, I think, is getting something done. So,
okay. Any other discussion before we hear the motion? Senior Representative Gallegos.
Chair Reed, I move to adopt the -3 amendments dated April 9th, 2015.
Thank you. Representative Gallegos has moved the Dash 3 amendments dated April 9, 2015. Any discussion on that motion? Any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries. The Dash 3 amendments are adopted. Representative Gallegos.
Chair Reed, I move House Bill 3308 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Gallegos has moved House Bill 3308 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the bill. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the the intent and the spirit in which the bill is offered. But I think from my perspective, throughout the hearing, I think we revealed and we understood, I think, that there really are a lot of resources available for students on these campuses that came and spoke with us. And I think we encouraged them to try to avail themselves of some of them in a more intentional way. But I would say, secondly, the OEIB and their mission statement is all about the equity lens and doing everything that they possibly can to look at disparities that exist and inequities that exist, and doing everything that we can do to align policies that are intended to improve that situation. So I think there's a lot of things in play. I think there's a lot of things that are underway. And from my perspective, it seems a bit redundant. So I'll be a no.
Thank you, sir. Further discussion, Representative Wisden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to my good friend, Representative Gallegos, obviously, you've no fault of your own. You weren't here for the testimony. I think you were ill that day. And we had good testimony. And I think the students brought up some real concerns that I talked to them, or I made a comment that I think we don't need a study on this. We really need to go back to the universities and talk to the universities, or ask the universities what their existing systems, why they aren't working to address these issues. I don't think another 2 years or whatever to study the issue. They identified problems, and I'm sympathetic to them, but I think that we need to use the existing systems we have, call them to account for what they're doing to address these students' concerns, and being sure that it doesn't get swept under the rug. So I'll be a no too. I think we need to address the issue immediately through existing resources.
Thank you, Representative Gallegos.
Comment. Thank you to my colleagues here on the panel. I think that you're correct that there are lenses to look at the issues, etc. But apparently, there are still issues that those lenses aren't resolving, let's say. And this particular effort will be to develop a strategy to get those systems working. So I do think that this is action, and I think it's action that's very much needed. Thank you.
Thank you. I guess I would also like to weigh in just slightly and say I find myself kind of between the two positions that are represented here. I'm going to be a yes, but I hope that as the study progresses, that those who are doing it do not feel compelled to wait to the study's completion if they find things that the legislature ought to be doing. I hope they'll come back and make those recommendations, and we'll have a chance to consider them and perhaps act on them. So, noting the objections, Representative Johnson and Representative Wisnett, are there other objections to the motion? Representative Nierman, it sounds like we better have a roll call vote, please. And this again is on the on House Bill 3308 to the floor with the due pass recommendation as amended.
Representative Hayden?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative McEwen?
Aye.
Representative Nierman?
No.
Representative Reardon?
Aye.
Representative Williamson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gallegos?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnett?
No.
Chair Reed?
Aye. And the motion carries, and House Bill 3308, as amended, heads to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Representative Gallegos, I hope you will carry.
For sure.
Thank you. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 3308.
2681.
2624. Carry on.
We can do the amendments. We can
adopt
the
amendments. Which one do you want to do first?
2681.
Okay. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 2681.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2681 directs community colleges to use results from 104 nationally available standardized assessments for purpose of determining course placement of students. Declares emergency is effective on passage. The proposed Dash 5 amendments replace the original provisions with requirements for Higher Education Coordinating Commission and State Board of Education to oversee work group on community college placement, including consideration of use of statewide summative assessment, and recommend legislation no later than September 15th, 2016. This measure does not yet have a fiscal on the Dash 5 amendments, so we can adopt them if that is your desire, but can't move the bill out today.
Very good. So I'm of the opinion that establishing some momentum here as we get to the end is a good thing. Representative Johnson, this is the one that has been sort of back and forth, so I wonder if you could describe the Dash 5 amendments, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate that. And committee members, you'll recall in our meeting, I guess, was it Wednesday?
Yes.
The last Wednesday. I talked about the need, I think, to focus the work of this group a bit more that could really be helpful as a bridge from K-12 into post-secondary. And the words that you'll see in the Dash 5s on line 10 that start with including consideration of whether to use a statewide summative assessment for students who are entering a community college directly after high school, or referring to how we can make the smarter balanced assessment have some value and worth. One of the criticisms that are directed towards that exam right now are that they're, why do we submit ourselves to this extra work, extra effort, and so forth? Other states, I would point out specifically Washington and California, are actively looking at this and how we can use the smarter balance to perhaps replace other assessments out there. But this will help to focus the work to be able to use this as a placement exam. I would like the work to go a little bit further, again, with what California and Washington are doing with using the exam as an indicator for those high school juniors who take the exam and don't do well, to say we need to make sure their senior year is invested in developmental education and getting them the essentials so that when they graduate they're ready for rigor. So it's I appreciate the Representative Comps' long suffering and patience as we've gone back and forth trying to find the perfect language. I think this does it, and I would sure appreciate your consideration.
Thank you. And from the way you concluded that comment, it sounds like you and Representative Comp are in agreement on this this approach.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Do you have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 2681, and those would be dated 4/9/15.
Thank you. Representative Johnson has moved the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 2681, dated April 9th, 2015. Any discussion on that motion? Representative Hayden.
Like to see, you know, financial impact statements, but I think the concept.
Representative Hayden, I'm sorry to interrupt. We're not going to be moving the bill because we don't have that. So this motion is just to adopt the amendments, and then we can go no further until we get that.
Okay.
Thank you. Other discussion? Any objections to the motion? I don't see any, so the motion carries, and the Dash 5 amendments are adopted. That's as far as we can go for today, or at least until we get the fiscal and revenue statements. So unless there's anything else on that for the moment, we'll close the work session. Yes, and we'll close the work session, and note that we're carrying House Bill 2681 over to the Monday meeting, and we'll be back to it. So close the work session on House Bill 2681 now, 2624.
Sure.
Okay, so now we'll open the work session on House Bill 2624.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2624 directs the Oregon Education Investment Board and Department of Education to advance career and technical education opportunities by fulfilling specified requirements, appropriates monies from general fund to Department of Education for purpose of complying with requirements, declares an emergency effective July 1, 2015. The proposed Dash 2 amendments direct the Department of Education to advance CTE policy by administering the distribution of grants for purpose of expanding teacher training programs. Once again, we do not have a fiscal on this one yet, on the Dash 2 amendments, so we can't move it out today. We can, however, adopt them, and the measure does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Reardon, this is you, correct?
This is. This is actually the one I started to talk about the other day. I got so excited.
Now's your chance.
Okay. Well, we've heard this before, but just kind of a summary is that the main issue is we need more and well-qualified teachers for the career technical education programs and STEM. And we one way to get those is to try to snag some people out of industry that are well-qualified technically, but they need to be educated to become educators. And so all this does is provide grants to four different universities or colleges. And allow them to set up programs to teach teachers and prepare these folks to be successful in the classroom. So they've been, assuming they have a successful career in their field, get them out there and make sure they have a chance to succeed in the classroom. And so Department of Ed would basically run the grant part. TSPC does what they always do, which is define the licenses that are required. And OEIB primarily helps communicate, make sure people know where the programs are available, where jobs are available, and that sort of thing. So it's pretty simple.
Thank you, Representative Reardon. Is it determined to be four? I note that the amendment says the grants will not exceed $250,000 and that there's $1 million appropriate. So obviously that would be sort of the maximum. But
I just assumed an even division. So you're correct in that it could be 10.
Okay. But anything else that we should know about how the amendment changes the original bill?
Primarily, it was written, just kind of redrafted so that it flowed better.
Okay.
Easier to read.
Got it. Okay. Any other questions for Representative Reardon? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really support the amendment, support the bill. I would point out one of my concerns, however, is the additional workload that this will put on TSPC's plate. Not that that's a bad thing, but I think we've all been a little frustrated with their ability to comply with what their current responsibilities are. So that's just a lead into some other things we're trying to do elsewhere in the building legislatively. But it does point out to one of the problems I think we've had in trying to get some highly qualified, but yet maybe not easy to certify people into the classroom working with kids. So we still have that hurdle to get over, but this is a great, great step forward, and I heartily support it.
Very good. Thank you. So again, we don't have the fiscal and revenue statements, so the extent of our opportunity today is to adopt the amendments and then stop. Representative Nierman, thank you.
Mr. Chair. Representative Reardon, what's your vision for this? Is this a one-time thing, or is this something that you see coming back in future biennia?
Setting up the programs, the grant money is actually to establish the programs, and then I would assume they would just run on continuously as long as there's a demand for those classes. And so I'm hoping it's one time.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Representative Reardon, do you have a motion?
Do I have a piece of paper and read it? I would move, Mr. Chair, I would move the -2 amendment.
Thank you. Representative Reardon has moved the -2 amendments to House Bill 2624. They're dated March 31st, 2015. Any discussion on the motion? Any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries. The -2 amendments are adopted, and we await the fiscal and revenue statements. So that will close the work session and carry over House Bill 2624 to our next meeting. And that takes us to House Bill 2996. I'm going to open the work session on House Bill 2996.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2996 establishes and defines the purpose of the Oregon Center of Cyber Excellence, requires Center to conduct biennial performance review of investments, create Center of Cyber Excellence Fund, appropriates general fund monies to Department of Consumer and Business Services for purposes of Center, declares emergency is effective on passage, proposed -1 amendments, add provisions related to key performance measures. Once again, we don't have a fiscal on those amendments as of yet. Measure does not have a subsequent referral.
I think we will add one.
I think we will.
Given that we're seeking, the bill is seeking some relatively significant, modest but significant funding. I would love to ask Dave Childers and Beth Cook if you'd like to come up and help us through the -1 amendments. As you come forward, I will take the blame if people want to offer it. I asked Dave and Beth to work on some key performance indicators. Speaking only for myself now, I like the intent of the bill, but I felt like it needed some more specifics from what we saw in the original hearing. So this is the result of that. Come back to how they might be measured. Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you mind a couple of the new members? I think you might want to talk about key performance measures, how that's part of the Ways and Means process.
Sure. Well, the intent, I don't think, is any great surprise, but if this bill, I'm fairly sure, will go on to Ways and Means and stand up against other meritorious requests for money, and as the Ways and Means process goes forward, I think it's important for the legislature to have a clear sense of what these monies would be used for and how the legislature would evaluate their success based on what metrics, how we would measure the success of the center's efforts. I'm happy to have you add to that if that's
sufficient. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for the committee members that are new, that this started back, I think, 2003, 2005. We added performance measures to the budgets of all the agencies that they have to say, you know, what they're going to do with this money, and so we can judge how they're performing with the money we give them. It's called key performance measures, and so that's what the chair's my amendment's addressing. So hold them responsible for delivering a service that we're paying for.
Very good. Mr. Childers.
Good morning.
Good morning. We'd appreciate if you could describe the amendments and how you see them.
Yeah, good morning. For the record, my name is David Childers. I'm a resident of Lake Oswego, and I'm here representing the Technology Association of Oregon. We created amendments to really identify the success factors associated with the center. To remind the committee, the center really works, one is very much like an agricultural extension, so it's designed to be a clearinghouse and also a convener in terms of the ability to bring cyber efforts forward. There are three legs of the stool, if you will. One is around education and curriculum to make sure that we are creating the right kinds of programs, both in the four-year universities, but also certifications through our community colleges and with industry support to get people moving forward in those ways. The other is to really work with the colleges and universities in support of their abilities to garner more federal and private grant dollars for research within the state, and then finally to help to promote, if you will, and evangelize the potential for good jobs in the tech world to using STEM programs and back into the middle schools and high schools. So if you understand through that, we really believe that it was based around the number of students that were enrolled as a very simple measure, that as we build these programs that we could actually begin to measure the number of students that were engaged. The other was the number of credentialing. One of the things that we heard, even from the Oregon State CIO, is that they really struggle to be able to get the follow-on education, the certifications and the continuing education. So the number of certifications and follow-on education that we're able to provide to help people, you know, stay up to speed. Then really the number of workers that are actually trained. I mean, from a standpoint of really looking at the number, this has always been about Oregon jobs. So how are we doing in putting people in Oregon jobs? And then finally, we have to look at the fact that the amount or the success of the research dollars that we've raised. I've shared with the committee before that while our universities are not restricted from applying for a number of these grants, history has proven that when they're not coordinated and run through a center, they're unlikely to receive them. So we'd like to be able to show the value that the center provides by looking at the amount of new resource dollars that we can bring in towards sustainability of the system. Sure.
That's great. Thank you for the summary. Any comments, questions? Mr. Chairman?
So thanks, Mr. Chairman. And I want to thank you, Mr. Childers, for the material that you provided me to look at this, especially I was interested to see how this goes on in other states. And I'm pretty convinced that Oregon's kind of lagging behind other states as far as we go. So you have me convinced, at least on that part. There's one thing that kind of gives me heartburn, and maybe I'll play the freshman card here a little bit. But I just I get I see we have a huge university system, and it's consumes a lot of money. And then when it seems like when they're not doing their job, then we have to come. The legislature's asked to come up with $2.5 million to help them do what they should have done in the first place, kind of thing. And I'm not sure that I'm right about that, but which is why I'm playing the freshman card here. But when I was researching this and looking at these other centers of cyber excellence and stuff, I kept asking myself, why doesn't the university just do this right now with the resources that they have? And so I'm really wobbly on this, and I'm not sure. I'm happy with the key performance measures that you put on there. That shows kind of a little bit of a commitment to some kind of accountability and integrity. So I think I'm going to be a no vote on this. I'm in support of Oregon getting a foothold in this thing, but I just have a little bit of heartburn, and I'm very close to yes, but I just don't think I'm quite there yet. So. If it passes, good luck with it.
Representative Nierman, you still have time. Today. All we're going to do today, probably, unless the fiscal showed up, is hopefully adopt the amendments. But
so we're just adopting amendments today. So you do have time then.
Yes. So feel free to, if you'd like to respond, that's fine. If not, you can take that up offline.
No, I will. Thank you, Chair Reed. I will make one comment. I share as a citizen, I share some of your concern. The practical reality of this is that the center, again, that we're talking about is truly a convener, and it is very difficult for the universities to take that neutrality position. We've seen Portland State, for their own benefit, attempt the certifications and the requirements to be able to work through that, and it was onerous and almost impossible for them to maintain it because the university system itself carries a tremendous amount of baggage with it. So if you're certifying, whereas we control it and put it into the center, then we're actually able to do a better job of managing the activities and the work that we're doing. The universities have a tendency, because of just their structure, to potentially overblow some things. I mean, that's my words in that. Whereas with the center, we have the ability and the structure that I believe that we've created and the governance around it to be able to keep it within a focus that's right for Oregon and the Pacific Northwest and the jobs that we have here. And it wouldn't necessarily be driven, unfortunately, we see some of the things in higher ed that are driven by research influence by a particular professor or a particular activity. I think it brings us to a point of better neutrality, if you will, and a better ability to address the needs for all Oregonians and not just the specific programs or the directions of a particular university.
Good. I look forward to talking with you both offline.
Very good. Thank you. Other questions, Representative Reardon?
Well, I greatly appreciate all the work that you are doing in helping us understand how industry and education need to work together. There are quite a few programs on the horizon, things that we're trying to find funding for. And so I'm trying to get clear in my mind is there overlap between this and other proposals that might be on the table? And so Beth and I just spent a delightful afternoon yesterday kind of going through some of those programs, so she knows exactly where I'm going with this. So we have other things that are looking at, you know, we have regional STEM hubs. We have STEM innovation and dissemination grants. We have high-demand post-secondary stuff, talent council things. Cyber Center sounds a lot like computer science to me. And so can you, maybe between the two of you, help me figure out how does this fit in with all the other good work that's been proposed?
So, Chair Reed, members of the committee, Representative Reardon. So, in particular, many of those programs we discussed yesterday afternoon and
Beth, could you please introduce yourself?
My name is Beth Cook, and I represent the Technology Association of Oregon. Many of those are K-12 programs, and while there would be some potential within the center, you know, this is definitely more of a, you know, services to business as well as higher education and research focus. So you know, two different kind of buckets. There would be some collaboration and coordination with entities such as the Oregon Talent Council if it should pass.
Okay, great. Thank you. It's very helpful.
You? Okay. Representative Gallegos?
Chair Reed, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated April 9th, 2015.
Thank you. Representative Gallegos has moved the Dash 1 amendments dated April 9th, 2015. Any discussion on that? Any objections to the motion? Seeing none, the Dash 1 amendments are adopted, and we await paperwork. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Close the work session on 2996 and carry over the bill to our Monday meeting, as may become the custom here for a little bit. And I've closed the work session, so that leaves us with a public hearing on House Bill 3516. Victoria.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 3516 requires each school obtaining approval from the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to offer academic degree to obtain a bond or letter of credit annually demonstrating school is financially sound and capable of fulfilling commitments to students, establishes requirements for bonds and letters of credit, grants students rights to bring claim against school, bond, or letter of credit if student suffers economic loss due to school's failure to provide educational services, establishes a process for the commission to place school or program on probation or to revoke approval for school to offer academic degrees.
Thank you. Representative Nathanson, thank you for your patience. Please come up and bring whomever you would like with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Nancy Nathanson, representative from District 13. Last month, the U.S. Department of Education named more than 550 colleges that it has put under extra financial scrutiny because of concerns about management or administration of federal financial aid dollars. Among those listed, there are five that have campuses here in Oregon. The Higher Education Coordinating Commission's Office of Degree Authorization certifies and regulates more than two dozen institutions that are located in Oregon, ensuring that they meet standards in topics such as curriculum, admissions, fees, and facilities. A number of other schools are exempt from this regulatory activity, such as Reed College and Willamette University. But for students at those non-exempt institutions that the office regulates, the students have no recourse to recover their tuition payments if a school closes or the prepaid courses are not delivered. The bill before you today, House Bill 3516, would protect students' tuition payments if they are attending a regulated degree-granting institution in Oregon. It would require those institutions to file a surety bond or letter of credit. It would also add an important regulatory step that would allow the Office of Degree Authorization to establish by rule criteria for placing a regulated school on probation, which may include requiring a school to increase or alter the amount of a bond or letter of credit. I have appreciated working with HEC and with representatives of some of the regulated schools, and we are all working now to address a few specific concerns, and you should expect shortly an amendment to resolve issues and clarify intent, particularly around financial loss, instruction or courses, and probation. Ultimately, this bill would proactively enhance student protection and allow the HEC to identify bonding requirements as necessary when an institution is failing to demonstrate financial soundness. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Nathanson. Let's hear from the rest of the panel. If you can hang around for a minute, Representative Nathanson, we'll see if we have some questions for you, too.
Good morning, Chair Reed, Vice Chair Swisnett and Gallegos, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dana Richardson, Deputy Director for Policy and Legislative Affairs at the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. And I just want to give you a little bit of context as to what the HEC's purview is in this area. A lot of folks know when the Higher Education Coordinating Commission was set up that we pulled in the CCWD and the Office of Student Access and Completion. But not all folks are really familiar with our private post-secondary education office, which I will introduce Juan. He runs that office, but they deal with the private career schools and the institutions that Representative Nathanson described through the Office of Degree Authorization. So that's kind of the context. The ODA, the Office of Degree Authorization, is really kind of a consumer protection because it's there. It exists to make sure that those students are getting the services that they've paid for. So I will turn it over to Juan to speak directly to the bill, and I'm happy to answer questions as well.
Thanks very much.
Good morning, Chair Reed, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Juan Baez Arevalo. I'm the Director of Private Postsecondary Education for the Oregon Higher Education Coordinating Commission. Before I go into the details of House Bill 3516, I would first like to share with you a bit of background and the need for this bill, and then I'll cover key details of how the House Bill 3516 addresses the need to protect student tuition. As Ms. Richardson described, the key role of the units under the Office of Private Postsecondary Education is to regulate and oversee private and out-of-state institutions serving Oregonians. In the past year, the Office of Degree Authorization has seen several cases of non-exempt regulated institutions at risk and not able to demonstrate financial strength. As a result, the Commission had to request that the institution secure a surety bond in the amount equal to the largest amount of prepaid tuition held at any time. Upon reviewing the ODA's statutory authority over at-risk institutions and realizing the possible need to cash a surety bond in order to take proactive steps to protect students, the ODA found that it lacked legal authority to enforce the terms of the surety bonds. The lack of authority to require a surety bond from these non-exempt regulated institutions, such as the Art Institute of Portland and Everest College, stands in contrast to the authority the HEC has under ORS Chapter 345 as it applies to private career schools. Under ORS 345, private career schools pay into and the HEC manages a tuition protection fund. Currently, Oregon students at non-exempt regulated institutions authorized by the ODA do not have any tuition protections should the school close. Many other states have surety bond or letter of credit requirements that ensure tuition reimbursement from private and out-of-state regulated institutions. It is worth noting that House Bill 3516 would not apply to exempt institutions such as Willamette University. Now, how does House Bill 3516 address the need to protect student tuition? Section 2 of House Bill 3516 protects student tuition payments for students who are attending the non-exempt regulated degree-granting institutions by requiring them to file a surety bond or letter of credit. The schools would be required to annually obtain and maintain a bond or letter of credit demonstrating that the school is financially sound and capable of fulfilling commitments to students. The bond or letter of credit must be maintained by the school for the entire period that the school operates in our state. The purpose of the bond would be to reimburse students for prepaid tuition if the school ceases to provide educational services. Section 2 allows the HEC to establish and calculate by rule the amount of the surety bond or letter of credit for institutions. Section 3 of the bill amends ORS 348612 and clarifies the steps and process by which the commission may place a school or program on probation or suspend or revoke a school's approval. Section 3 adds an important step to the Commission's regulatory actions by requiring the Commission that the Commission establish by rule the criteria for placing a school on probation, which may include requiring a school to increase or decrease the amount of the bond or letter of credit. Finally, Section 3 makes clear that if a school fails to meet the conditions of the probation established by the Commission, that the Commission may suspend or revoke approval to operate in Oregon. In sum, House Bill 3516 would establish a requirement for schools regulated under ORS 348606 to obtain and maintain annually a surety bond or letter of credit. It would also clarify that when a school fails to comply with the requirements of approval, including failing to maintain a bond or letter of credit, the Commission may suspend or revoke the school's approval to operate. Ultimately, this bill is about providing protection to students. Thank you for your time. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Arevalo. I imagine we will have some questions. I heard someone talk about amendments, and I just noticed something I've never seen before. On page 2 of the bill, line 21 says Section 3. Line 45 also says Section 3. So that may be one of the things we should fix in an amendment. Are there questions? Representative Wisdom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said that you get to determine the amount of the bond. Is that based upon the value of the, you know, or the cost of the class, or how do you do that? And is there guidelines on how what amount that is to be?
Chair Reed, Vice Chair, we would be in rule establishing the amounts that would be appropriate for every institution. So it would be a formula based on, and most likely based on the amount of prepaid tuition held, for example, at the beginning of the semester by the institution.
Good. Then follow up.
Yes, please.
So is that how other states have done it in determining that amount?
Some states have similar measures. Other states have, every state, it's its own world.
Yes.
So there's unique approaches. Some states have minimum amounts of a bond. Some have percentages. Some have caps at the end. And some don't. Some have just whatever the prepaid tuition is, because it's a variable by institution. So,
and a fault, another fault. And I guess I have to ask the question, why does Reed College not have to do this?
I got to break in for there, because it's not, I mean, I was appreciating hearing about my alma mater across the street, Reed, you know, there's some Linfield students in the room, so maybe you can answer that question from a real comprehensive point of view.
Certainly. Under our laws for the Office of Degree Authorization, there are several institutions that have been exempt for numerous years, and that's under ORS 348-597. That would include our public universities like Oregon State, Chemeketa Community College, OHSU, and private nonprofit institutions who have the highest level of accreditation, which is regional accreditation, and that they have been in our state with successful presence, have a physical campus like Willamette, Reed, and so forth. And after they have done that for 5 years and meet all the requirements, and as long as they meet those requirements, they're exempt from the regulations of the ODA. So that's why Reed College or Willamette or Linfield are not regulated by the ODA.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. And those, to be clear, I know you said it a couple of times, those schools that are subject that meet those requirements are not subject to this requirement about a surety bond.
Correct.
Great. Thank you. Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the extent of the problem of whatever degree programs going away or colleges shutting down, colleges that would be governed by this? How often does that happen?
Chair Reed, Representative Nier, it does happen. We had one institution just a couple months ago that shut down, and it was an institution that about a year ago we noticed was at risk, and within a relatively short period of time, they weren't able to meet their commitments, and they realized that, so we worked with them. There are several other institutions in an at-risk category. So out of the 20-some institutions that we have right now with a physical campus in Oregon, close to 20-some percent of them, if you look at the federal report, would be in an at-risk category. So it's a good amount of schools. It can and does happen. We had a massive closure in late August, early September of a career school. And that's just an example of Anthem. And I don't know if you remember the news of Anthem College. Very dramatic impact on the students and the community. Just imagine you're in the middle of your program and the school shuts down. Where are you going to transfer? Mm-hmm. What's going to happen to you? What about your prepaid tuition, your livelihood, your rhythm, the daycare, everything else that goes with it? Massive impact on the students.
And we see those kinds of acquisitions and mergers and so on too. I think Anthem was an example of that, but
exactly.
There are others that are talked about as well. I think Representative McEwen.
Oh, thank you, Chair Reed. I just want to thank Representative Nathanson for bringing this forward. I've been in the unfortunate situation of working with students who have fallen prey to this. And as any other industry, there are great actors and there are bad actors, and on occasion. Not even a bad actor, something happens beyond their control that financially puts them in a situation where they are at risk and they have to close their doors. I think it's imperative that we do everything we can, and Ms. Richardson, you used the term consumer protection, and you've heard me say over and over in this committee that we need to educate our students so they are good consumers of these education dollars. We can educate them, you know, as well as we can, and they can still fall prey to this type of situation. And I think it's imperative that we protect them from a situation that you know, to your comments, sir, is devastating over time. Not only do they lose their program, they may lose the time that they've spent, the money that they've spent, and the prepaid money that they've spent to complete a program. And I just think this is a wonderful bill, and I thank the representative for bringing it, and thank Senator Dembro for co-sponsoring it.
Thanks, Representative.
Good bill.
Thank you, Representative McKeown. Representative Reardon?
Just very
Representative Johnson.
Brief clarification. Also love the bill and what you're doing to protect students. Did you consider any other expenses that might be covered under and be protected? I'm thinking of textbooks, anything like that, or is it only protecting them for their prepaid tuition?
Mr. Chair, Representative Reardon, the intent is to cover the tuition payments. We hadn't thought about expanding it. And you'll hear from representatives that work with some of the schools that would be impacted, and they may want to comment on that as well. I think in other states, we've typically seen the coverage for tuition payments.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dana, would you happen to know what percentage of degrees or certificates currently are being issued as we look at our 40-40-20 metrics, in that middle 40 or any other part of the 40 that come from for-profits? Because it's a fairly significant amount, and I don't know the percentage, but, and this is all related, though, I guess the point that I would make, that yes, there are some bad actors in the sector, but there are also some very good actors who are providing a very worthwhile and needed service to students who may have non-traditional schedules and so forth and so on. So what kind of percentage of our current output of degrees actually come through this portal, if you will?
Chair Reed, Representative Johnson, it's a small percentage. You're looking at, if you look at the conglomerate of mm-hmm. all the institutions, from our public institutions, sure. the non-regulated institutions, it's a small percentage, and I don't have an exact number for okay. you, but it's less than 5% of that contribution. It is an important contribution, but we are working to have the institutions report to us differently, and so we will have much more specific data in the very near future, so we can give you an exact number of apples to apples and what that percentage is.
Follow up?
Yes, please.
And in determining that an institution is at risk, is there a commonly understood definition of what that means? Is that determined by federal law, or is that how do you determine that? What actions does an institution have to take to put themselves into double jeopardy, if you will?
Representative Johnson, there are several different ways that an institution could place itself in an at-risk category. Definitely, the federal government has different parameters, and you've seen recently the federal government issuing new regulations or strengthening regulations on the sector. And they look at a different parameters and formulas of they have a credit, kind of a point range for institutions. So they have anything below like a 1.5 on a scale that the federal government creates, where they're looking at revenues, they're looking at financial liabilities, and so forth. For us in our administrative rules, we also have the term at risk. And so the at-risk term could be a variety of factors, but when we look at the financial components, we're looking at cash flow. We're looking at those liabilities. We're looking at the overall expenses. You're looking at actual cash on hand. Oftentimes, when you look at any particular financial report, you can see an institution has very limited cash on hand. Yet their liabilities are very high. You're saying, okay, how are you meeting those expenses on a month-to-month basis? Where their expenses are way too high, or their liabilities are way too high in order to meet those. Unfortunately, sometimes it does happen, and this was the case with Anthem College, where the campus here in Oregon was very healthy, but the larger corporate was not. Hmm. or individuals at the corporate level were looking at selling the institution, and then they make a financial decision that benefits their shareholders and not the students. And that's where the rug was pulled from the students. So even with those at-risk monitoring, there's always a situation where student tuition could be at risk.
Please. So this work of monitoring that the Office of Degree Authorization is already doing wouldn't necessarily be increased by this bill. It would just give you some teeth, if you will, to enforce a few of these actions that you're asking for in the bill. Is that right?
It would give us some teeth, as you say. We would certainly a little bit of additional work, but I think it's good work, healthy work, in making sure that institutions keep and maintain the surety bond annually. So that's an additional step for our for us in terms of work, but it's not a substantial step. You know, I think it's one that facilitates the work on the front end rather than the back end as we are determining what's going on financially with the institution and scrutinizing financial records.
One final one. Representative, I think you mentioned that there were five Oregon institutions that made the national list. Would you happen to know which ones those are or have that available? Just so we can get an idea of what type of...
I'm confirming.
Okay.
Yes, I've made a note that it's the Art Institute of Portland, Everest College, Le Cordon Bleu, Multnomah University, New Hope Christian College, Oregon College of Oriental Medicine.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. One last question before you all escape. I think, Ms. Richardson, you said you expect some amendments. Can you describe them in general terms?
Yes. Chair Reed. We think, particularly with regard to Section 2.5A, that the reference to economic loss might be clarified with an exchange of the word monetary to kind of really focus on the dollars paid as opposed to possible secondary economic impacts, and also potentially kind of tighten up in that same line, with Section 1.14, around educational services. I think what we're really trying to get at is having courses to attend, so maybe instruction is really the right kind of word there. And then we're working with, Craig Campbell will testify after us, we're working with them to just provide some clarity around our rulemaking process. And so the sense is to put in statute some of the assurances that those schools might be seeking about what might happen within our rulemaking process.
So that others are clear, Representative Williamson and Representative Wisnett have obligations with the Ways and Means Committee. So that's why they're all leaving. And Representative Nathanson, please feel
Thank
free
you,
to
Mr.
excuse
Chair.
Yourself. Thank you. Okay, so that's helpful on the description of the amendments, and those are underway, I assume. Very good.
Yes.
Thank you. Thanks very much. We have two more people who want to testify, Craig Campbell and Jeff Eng, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of the Art Institute of Portland, which was just recently mentioned. There are some language within the bill that we have some concerns about, but quite frankly, thanks to the work of Representative Nathanson and the folks at the HEC, we think we're going to be able to get through some of the detail language that gets us comfortable. Obviously, from a policy perspective, this bill is a good idea. It protects those folks who, as students, don't have any control over whether a course is canceled on them or a school closes. So it provides them a level of protection. At the same time, because it becomes a business expense, we just want to make sure that we know as carefully as possible how close we need to be dealing with bonding, because bonding is not a cheap thing to do. But in this case, it's a necessary thing to do. It's something we do in other states. And so we don't have any problem with the general concept of the bill, and we're working through the details. I wanted to add an extra thanks to the HEC for reaching out to us. This was, as you know, a late bill into the session, but they have been in communication with us since the concept started arising and have been in communication with us all along. So,
very good. Does the description of the amendments that Ms. Richardson offered, obviously we haven't seen that language specifically, but do you expect that that's going to take care of your concerns?
Mr. Chair, for the most part, that covers it, although there's a couple of other things we're talking to about. I think Juan mentioned earlier about the possibility of a percentage or a cap. We're still talking about that as a possibility, but other than that, some of the language that clarifies what the costs are for, making sure that there's real clarity clarity about what the rulemaking will cover, those are the things that really have importance to us, and those are going to be addressed. So thank you.
Thanks very much. Mr. Ng?
Hi, I'm Jeff Ng. I'm the State Director of the Northwest Career Colleges Federation. Thank you, Chair Reed, for having us here today and members of the committee. I'm going to piggyback on what Mr. Campbell has said. We strongly support protecting students. That's what the Federation firmly stands by. We did have some original concerns with this bill. I believe the language that we've heard working with Representative Nathanson will address some of those concerns. Other concerns that our member schools have been addressed by Mr. Campbell as well, and that is in the rulemaking. These surety bonds and letters of credit are very, very expensive at times, and putting forth together a reasonable cap and working with them in the rulemaking process, I think, would be very, very helpful, and we look forward to that. We strongly support this opportunity to protect students and look forward to moving forward as we go through rulemaking with this.
Very good. Thank you. Questions for either of these gentlemen? Representative Nierman, then Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So one thing I just noticed when you're talking about the amendments there is that phrase failure to provide educational services, that maybe you need to put some boundaries around that so that a kid who's just frustrated that you're not offering a class this term or something like that doesn't exercise his personal right of action against the school or something like that. But just a thought.
Chair Reed and Representative Nierman, that's exactly the concern. As our school directors, as business owners, and operational people, very first thing they do would take this bond potential and take it to a provider. And the language that they are getting back, particularly as it relates to Section 2.5A, is that they are worried that they will not be able to secure a bond with that particular language in, because it opens up the bond to liability, which should really be covered under their liability insurance. So there was a real panic if that language remains, that there will be the inability, particularly at some of the smaller schools that are located exclusively here in Oregon and are very good players, will not be able to participate as a school because they will not be able to secure a bond or a letter of credit.
Thank you. Representative Johnson?
Well, just to follow along on that same thought, that's why I think the language that the representative talked about being worked on to clarify what economic loss means, specifically monetary loss. We certainly don't need pain and suffering or something else unfolded in here, which could, you know, blue sky could be, how do you bond for that? So I think that's an important component, because obviously we want to provide the certainty and the security that students need to have and ought to have, but at a cost that doesn't make the degree or your certificate, you know, unobtainable because it's going to be so expensive. So there's that dynamic and that tension we have to play within. But I feel good about what the representative's trying to do and working with all the stakeholders. So anxious to see what comes out of their work.
Great. Thanks. Other comments, questions?
Thank you.
Don't see any. Thank you very much. Sounds like there's good momentum towards the amendments and obviously some urgency given the rest of our schedule. That completes the list of people who have signed up to testify. Is there anyone else who'd like to be heard on this bill? I don't see anyone. So with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3516. It is on the agenda for a subsequent meeting for a work session already, so I don't need to carry anything over with that. And I think that concludes our agenda for today. Have we covered anything else? So we'll be meeting on Monday at 8:30. As for you, Representative Johnson.
I'm ready. Thank you.
Good. And Representative McEwen, hopefully that helps you too. And we have a number of things we've carried over. Next week will be interesting, a little bit flexible as we move around and wait for paperwork and that sort of thing. Anything else to come before the committee today? I don't see
anything. Good
job. Enjoy your weekend. See you on Monday. We're adjourned.
Thank you.
You.
Thank you.
You. Weekend. See you on Monday. We're adjourned.